convened with the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Today we have four different bills, so we're going to try to get through them. We have two tax credit bills, as well as a developmental screening bill, and one with ECFE and other programs in that. A couple of announcements that we have is, it's too bad Representative Garofalo is not here, because I have a letter in the packets to the commissioner asking about fiscal notes, and that he pay attention and hopefully get back to us sooner on that, because I know that's happening throughout the legislature. Also in your packets are the education finance books, Financing Education in Minnesota. If you could keep these in your packets, you could take them home and study them if you'd like to, but if you can keep them for reference. We're all learning about how levies are funded and other education items in our area, so we wanted to have those in your packets. And Barry LaGrave, who heads up the sound systems and does some of the taping, is in charge of all that, is they are running into interference problems with the microphones. So if you have wireless devices, if you could turn them off. Oh, and the public too. If you could turn off your wireless devices, we are having trouble with interference. I was trying to think about that. Wireless devices, I think, includes cell phones, PDAs, those types of things. Okay.
Yeah.
We will start out with Representative Thiessen's bill. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Paul Thiessen.
And I will move House File 20 be recommended to pass and move to the Finance Committee and then to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Committee for further referral to the Committee on Taxes.
Right. Okay. Yes, thank you. That sounds about right.
Okay. Do you have an amendment?
I do, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment, is that in your packets?
What's the number of the first one you'd like to move?
The A3.
Okay, A3. Okay. Okay. Representative Thiessen moves, I will move, the chair moves, the A3 amendment.
And Madam Chair, this is a fairly technical amendment that really that makes sure we have some rules in place that you have to waive a fee for ECFE programs and for school readiness programs. This would just allow those programs to accept scholarship money. It's to clarify that, and then it also clarifies that ECFE programs and school readiness programs could accept. Basically, what it does, it allows those programs to accept scholarship money if this bill were to pass.
Okay. Does everybody have the amendment? It's H-O-O-2-O-A-3. Is there any discussion? This is really just to get in the shape the author wants it. Hearing none, those in favor, motion by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment passes. What is your next amendment, Representative
Thiessen? And Madam Chair, is there an A1 amendment, a technical amendment? A2, that's the only other amendment there is? Okay. The A2 amendment... would strike language allowing the scholarships to go to child care programs provided by family daycare providers. Basically, it's that language at line 4-1 to 4-2.
Representative Thiessen moves amendment H-O-O-2-O, or the chair moves amendment H-O-O-2-O. A2 to amend House File 20. Is there any discussion? Representative Ward?
This is A2. Madam Chair, this is A2.
It's my understanding, yes. H-O-O-2-O-A-2, yes.
And Representative Thiessen, what does it do again?
It strikes the language that family daycare providers the early childhood credential would be allowed to get the scholarship money. The point being trying to focus the money on programs that focus on school readiness.
Okay.
Representative Ward, typically we let the authors get the bill in the shape they need to and then explain the bill, and then we can ask questions about the bill once in shape.
And if there's concerns about that, we can hold that off till later if people want to do that.
Okay. Those in favor of the motion by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted.
And then I have one more technical amendment, Madam Chair. I apologize. It's on line 5.22 of the bill. And what I would like to do is, where there's a $0 and a $3.5 million, I'd like to just do blank appropriations. I think that's more appropriate for farther down the process. And it's actually the A1 amendment, I guess. Is that in people's packets? It's not. Okay. And then what it would also do would change the 2006 to 2008 and the 2007 to 2009.
President Thiessen, I am going to ask the staff to tell us how that would be worded. Ms. Lemire.
Madam Chair and members, on page 5, line 22, delete 0 and insert a blank. Delete 2006 and insert 2008. Delete $3,500,000 and insert a blank, and delete 2007 and insert 2009.
Okay. Representative Thiessen, was there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Representative Thiessen, if you could present
Thank you,
your bill.
Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Basically, this is a bill that creates a tax credit for corporations to get who contribute to a program that provides scholarships for school readiness programs, that the state would give them a credit against their taxes, the theory being that we can draw in some private dollars, encourage some private dollars to supplement the public dollars we spend on our early childhood programs. And it's structured in a way that it's aimed at programs, again, that are focused on school readiness, on early childhood school readiness preparation, that it has a income limit, so it's a $57,000 income limit approximately. So families who make less than $57,000, that would obviously change as the years go by, would qualify to receive the scholarship. And then it sets up some rules about how these scholarships would be granted. The money would have to be contributed to a 501c3, a nonprofit organization that focuses on scholarships of these types, and that we put some restrictions that 85% of the money has to be actually spent on scholarships, which is really getting after, you know, where administrative cost goes, and some other rules related to that you can't just fund a scholarship for an individual and get the tax credit. It has to be generally available to people. The credit that is allowed to the corporation, they would get a credit against 50% of what they contribute. So they wouldn't get a credit for the whole amount. It would be equal to 50%, and they would be capped at $100,000 in a given year. So a corporation couldn't get a credit greater than $100,000. And so really the fundamental theory here, I think I do want to emphasize that this is not a replacement and should not be considered a replacement for actual state dollars going into these programs, because we need to support them with public dollars. But it's a way at least to get at maybe trying to draw in some more private dollars into these programs to supplement what we do as a state with our public money. And, Madam Chair, I do have a Superintendent, Dr. Barb Devlin from the Richfield Schools, who has some comments she'd like to make as well, if that's okay.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Dr. Barbara Devlin, Superintendent of the Richfield Schools. Chair Slawik, Vice Chair Bly, members of the Early Childhood Learning Finance Division, I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony regarding House File 20, In my testimony, I'm going to talk a little bit about the need for early childhood experiences, the role that corporate tax credits can play, and then I'll suggest a few ways in which the legislation could be amended, and some of which have already been suggested, I think. The first topic of the growing need for early childhood learning experiences, probably all of you have looked at the Mind the Gap report that talks about the growing disparities in various areas, particularly in the metro area. And among other recommendations, the report suggests continued and strengthened investment in education is key to Minnesota's future success. I wanted to give you a little bit of information about Richfield because I think it's such a good microcosm for the growing changes in our state. Our enrollment is becoming increasingly diverse. The first bullet talks about our district-wide enrollment, but the second bullet emphasizes how our incoming kindergarten students point to the future and how diverse this is a suburban district and how diverse this suburban district is becoming. In our incoming kindergarten class this year, over 65% of our students were of color. Nearly 50% of them were English language learners. Over 60% of them qualify for free and reduced price lunch. A growing proportion of those students enter school with limited kindergarten readiness. In fact, we participated in the state kindergarten assessment, and the February 2005 report indicated that only 43% of our students at that time, our incoming kindergartners, demonstrated proficiency in two kindergarten readiness domains that point to success in future academics, and that would be mathematical thinking and language and literacy. And of course, our district, like many other diverse districts, experiences achievement gaps. We know that preschool interventions make a difference, and I wanted to highlight the wonderful success that we've had with our Bloomington-Richfield Family Center Get Ready program, which is funded by a federal Early Reading First grant. It's a literacy-rich, full-day, 11-month program delivered to 3- and 4-year-olds. It clearly is a Cadillac program, as the federal government has insisted on.
Dr. Devlin, I just wanted to let the committee members know that your testimony is, there is a copy of it if you like to follow along. It's helpful.
Thank you.
Okay,
yes.
So thank you. Please proceed.
The last page, and I won't go through it, but the last page 4 of the handout just provides a summary of the wonderful results of that Early Reading First program and the difference that it does make in terms of kindergarten readiness. The key problems with the program are twofold. One is limited access. The Get Ready program, as wonderful as it is, serves 90 children from Richfield and Bloomington, 30 children from Richfield, 60 from Bloomington. It serves the neediest of the needy, and we have 45 students on the waiting list on the Richfield part of the program alone. And then there's limited funding. This federal program gives us $11,000 per pupil to provide a wonderful program that makes a difference. That compares with the current revenue levels of $112 per child per year for early childhood family education and $60.58 per child for school readiness programming. The federal grant's limited to 3 years. If we don't get a new grant, that we can't sustain the program. Now, corporate tax credits can help expand access to school readiness programs. And House File 20 would provide a way for corporations to be able to show their interest in investing in our future by expanding access to quality early childhood learning experiences. My written testimony references the bill as it was written, and I tried to do some calculations as the bill was originally written as to how many children it would serve, and depending on the amount of the scholarship, I calculated that it would serve between about 1,500 and 3,000 students. Of course, if you put a lot more money into it, it could serve more students. But just to show you what a small amount that is, of our kindergarten students this year that came to the Richfield schools, 240 of them were considered at risk. So if you went backwards into the early childhood population, you'd very quickly, practically in Richfield alone, achieve 1,500 to 3,000 students. So obviously the number of children receiving scholarships would be small in relation to the total pool of children that would meet the qualifications. So I added a point in our italics that I would emphasize that this type of scholarship program would be a supplement, but it would not eliminate the need for increased funding for early childhood family ed or school readiness programs, which are, I think are severely underfunded. And then I suggested some amendments for possible consideration. Some of them have already been incorporated. One is I really did want to point out that the current law requires the sliding scale for early childhood family ed and school readiness programs. So if the scholarship were provided under current law, there's a question as to whether or not those programs could accept the scholarship. So that would have to be clarified. And then the second was the question about including child care programs. Unless there's some guarantee that the child care programs employ early learning standards and assess kindergarten readiness, really do things to prepare kids for kindergarten. Otherwise, we wouldn't achieve the goal of greater readiness for kindergarten. And then finally, this is just a technical point, but the bill allows for the establishment of a lot of different foundations that would give away scholarships. And it just occurred to me that the Minnesota statutes already provides for the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. It has a mission that's very closely aligned with what the bill is proposing. And especially if the number of scholarships to be granted is fairly small, my thinking is that perhaps it could be handled under the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. So with that, I just thank you for your interest and for your attention.
Members, we'll take a couple of questions. We have four bills today, so we have probably about 10 minutes for questions. If you can, so Sarah, if you can, or Tricia, if you can start a list. I see we have some members. We have one technical amendment from your A1 amendment that was not distributed. There's one more correction, so I would like to take care of that before we move to questions. Ms. Lemire, can you review that change?
Madam Chair, it is on page 3, line 10. We're deleting 290.0676 and inserting 290.0678.
The chair moves that amendment. Is there any discussion? Again, this is to get it in the shape so we can consider it. Okay, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. With that, we will move to questions. There was kind of a tie over here for hands. So is it Representative Nornes first?
Am I first?
I think
okay.
So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question here. Where you were on page 3 where you're listing the qualifying pre-kindergarten programs, you list a lot of them. I'm just trying to clarify, you've got early childhood development programs licensed by Human Services, and I think on the next page on the top it's talking about child care programs again, and family providers, I think. Does this also include centers? Are they included or not included?
Representative Chair, Representative Nornes, it would in I think it's lines 3.29 and 3.30, those schools would be covered by the centers, and if they don't, that would be the intent, but that's how it was intended to be drafted.
Right.
And I would note, Madam Chair, that the issue of ECFE and school readiness being able to accept those programs, I think, was taken care of by the A3 amendment, which added those to the program. So the Dr. Devlin's comments, she was the one that kind of motivated that amendment, so we tried to accomplish that.
Okay. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that Representative Thiessen was willing to make a small amendment, and I wonder if you're still open to that, Representative Thiessen. It would be on page 3, lines 3.3 to 3.31, 3.30 to 3.31, and it's simply to eliminate National Association for the Education of Young Children or just those words. It would, in other words, it would end up reading a preschool, nursery school, or early childhood development program licensed by the Department of Human Services and accredited by the National Early Childhood Program Accreditation.
And Madam Chair, and some I've been approached by some people who are interested in these issues and have worked on this. I'm going to confess that I don't know. I'm open to the change. I'm going to confess I don't know enough about these accreditation organizations. I know there's concerns raised about some of the curriculum that they have, but you folks probably actually know more about who these folks are, who these accreditation organizations are than I do. So I'd be open to it, subject to the fact that I don't know very much.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Very helpful. Representative Gottwalt, are you familiar with the National Early Childhood Program Accreditation?
I think what Representative Thiessen commented to is accurate, that there is concern about the curriculum there, and I would move that we strike that language.
But all of the accreditation on
No, just National Association for the Education of Young Children, or those words only would be struck.
Representative Gottwald, if we do that, I need clarification on what is the National Early Childhood Program. Is that a specific program? Do you know?
It is a specific organization, as I understand, and we have somebody here who could testify to that, I believe.
Okay. We can do that. Members, just remember the time, and then in fairness, I will disclose that I have been on the National Association for the Education of Young Children's Board, so I am familiar with it. I am not familiar with, though, the National Early Childhood Program Accreditation, the other one. So,
Madam Chair, it would be appropriate to have the testimony. There may be another way to get at what we're trying to do here, which would be to refer to Minnesota's early learning standards and programs that adopt and are incorporating those, which the MELF program is kind of mirror language from the, I think it's MELF, is that how you say it? Right. Who's kind of working towards some of those standards. So, I'm willing to work on this issue going forward, too, and there may be a more elegant way to kind of get at the goal of kind of focusing this money on school readiness and kindergarten readiness. But with that comment, I don't know.
Madam Chair, just to that point.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I apologize, I was in late, but are we laying this bill over for consideration? Or are we?
No, this is traveling. We have two tax credits up today. The tax committee would like to see the tax bills and all the credits and so forth.
Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo.
I was going to have two suggestions, but since that's what's happening, Representative Gottwald, maybe instead of offering an amendment now, you could speak with Representative Thiessen after committee and we could perhaps work out something between here and the next stop, as opposed
to withdraw the amendment.
Doing that, because and Madam Chair, in fairness, I think you have a 24-hour rule in this committee as well, correct, on amendments?
Yes, and I think that there was a similar concern, I'll tell you, in my tax credit bill that's coming up, and so I think that we can both talk with you about that, because we need to know just a little bit more about where we're headed there, and I be honest, I'm not sure.
And again, so, Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, you've agreed with Representative Gottwald to work with him on this between now and the next stop.
So. Madam Chair, I absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We should just call you Chair Garofalo, huh? Thank you for negotiating that. That was beautiful. So, thank you. I appreciate your help.
I could show it.
With that, we'll go for it. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thiessen, I like this idea. I think the tax credit thing is a good thing. I've got a bill that does some similar things, but I guess my question is, how much money do you think this will raise? How much money do you think the tax credit will attract?
Madam Chair, that's a good question, Representative Eastland. In the previous bill, we capped it at $3.5 million. I don't know how much it's gonna attract, and I should mention, for what it's worth, to this committee, it's more of a tax issue, but this wouldn't be this appropriation wouldn't be open without limits. We'd actually put a cap on it. It would be kind of a first come, first serve application kind of thing. So whatever that number is picked, we would be able to control the dollars. So if there were a lot of dollars coming in, and I don't know if that will be the case or not, we'd have some controls over our tax credit spending in that regard. But I don't know the answer. That's a long way of saying that.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm asking the question because, I could understand what the corporate world would be interested in this. They've shown a lot of interest in early childhood stuff. But I think the MELF experience has kind of indicated that they're also interested in being involved, kind of. And so I'm wondering how much hands-on involvement is going to motivate corporate contributions. I mean,
Representative Thiessen?
Madam Chair, and I think that's a good question. You know, the way that the bill is currently drafted is that the corporation could actually set up its own 501c3. And, you know, there's some conditions about it had to be generally available to people. It can't be kind of focused on particular groups or particular individuals. But in that sense, they could use their tax credits as long as they meet the criteria of getting kids ready for learning to kind of manipulate it the way they want, to kind of focus their money where they want to have their money focused. I don't know if that answers your question, but, you know, they would be arguably set, you know, depending on the model they pursue, they could be actually setting up their own 501c3 to do this. And from that regard, they would have a lot more control over how they spend the money. And that's probably a policy decision for this committee to make. But does that answer, get at your question?
Representative Easton?
Well, it does. I was looking on page 4, just on the, where it says to qualify as a preschool SGO, the charitable organization. And I was looking at that, and I was trying to understand how you know, who is going to meet those qualifications. Is this referring to the organization delivering the educational services? Is that what you're referring to here?
Representative Thiessen?
Madam Chair, no. There would be a separate organization set up that would deliver the scholarships, and then they would actually pay the preschool or the child care center or what have you the scholarship money on behalf of the students. So the entity that would get set up here is actually a scholarship-giving, granting entity.
And who would oversee that? I mean, where does that fit in the organizational structure of
Representative
things?
Eastland, Representative Thiessen?
Madam Chair, who would oversee it? Well, there's certain rules, like the IRS and the Attorney General have general nonprofit rules. We've set up some rules here, so it would be the Department of Education that would enforce kind of the general criteria that you can't focus it on one individual student and those variety of things. But other than that, it would really be up to the mission of that nonprofit organization that's set up to grant these scholarships.
Representative Eastland, and Representative Eastland, you know, as we've discussed, there will be similar bills coming forward, and so we'll be, I think, talking about this issue at length. And this committee will be part of deciding and shaping these kinds of bills and what we want to see happen. With that, for the last question, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question, and maybe you can explain on 3.22. All of this talks about preschool, and then on number one it says younger than age 7, not yet enrolled in kindergarten, first grade, or Minnesota resident. Does this mean they have to be in preschool, and maybe for some reason they're immigrants or whatever, and are still at age 7 in a preschool?
Representative Thiessen?
Madam Chair, that's correct. You'd have to meet all those things. So you're younger than 7, and you're not yet in kindergarten, and you're a Minnesota resident. So okay. It would be for someone exactly what you said.
Okay. And then one other question I have. Have you done any kind of impact and how this would affect the revenues for in tax revenues for the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, that would really be up to us in this regard because, again, it would be a capped amount. And
right.
So we would say we're going to spend $3 million on this. It would affect tax revenues up to $3 million. So whatever amount we put in place, we would control that because we're doing this as a capped tax credit. Right. And so we just appropriate a certain amount of money for this tax credit. First come, first serve, whoever gets in with their applications to apply for the tax credit would get those sort of certificates. So it's not like a forecasted program. We'd actually control the spending. Was that your question?
Well, I think it is. I think, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I was just trying to get at if there could be, I don't know what that tax rate is and how much money the state would be losing. So somehow in that process, I hope that's spelled out very clearly because we're kind of just changing who controls the revenue here. So,
Representative Thiessen.
And Madam Chair, it would be completely under control because we're going to say what that amount of money is.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify at this time on this bill for or against it? Members with tax credits, we do have several of these coming through in several committees, and they are going to gather them in the tax committee, but we are aware, I think tomorrow we're going to be a lot more aware of how much revenue there really is, and tax credits do cost something. So I'm not sure how many we're going to be able to afford in general. Welcome to the committee. If you could proceed with your testimony. Of course, we're running a little short on time, but...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm a pediatrician and a policy analyst with EdWatch. I want to thank Representative Thiessen, and my comments will apply to your bill, so I won't testify a second time. EdWatch is very supportive of the idea of parental involvement and parental choice in these kinds of bills, and heartily support the idea, and thank both Representative Thiessen and Representative Slawik for bringing these forward. And I know there are other bills similar being brought forth by others, and I want to say that we do support them in the very admirable goal of trying to improve academic achievement and close the achievement gap. However, one needs to be careful about the organizations with which one is associating in this very beneficial process. And we do have concerns about the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and are very much appreciative of both Representative Slawik and Representative Thiessen being aware of our concerns and willing to look at them. This particular organization has a reputation of putting out curriculum that is highly controversial, and no matter what one's views are about the various topics that they deal with, we feel that it is important for it to be in the realm of parents, because it doesn't have to do with directly with math and reading and academic achievement. And I have some examples, some quotes from the curriculum, as well as some of the things that they are selling on their website to give you an idea of why we are concerned. So I, again, appreciate both representatives being open to this concern and know that their intentions are to promote academic achievement and the benefit of the children of Minnesota, and to just be aware of this.
Do you have a handout?
I do.
Okay, if the page could make sure the handout gets out. Thank you, and we will take your comments into consideration.
Thank you.
The chair moves that House file. Representative Thiessen, any closing comments? Are you finished?
I'm done.
Okay, thank you. Representative, the chair moves House File 20 as amended be recommended to pass as amended and return it to the Committee on Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness for further referral to the Committee on Taxes. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And the bill moves forward. Thank you. Next, we need to approve the minutes. Let's see. Representative Eastland, have you had a chance to read the minutes?
I did glance at them quickly, and I made sure my name is on there. Yep.
So moved. Representative Eastland moves approval of the minutes for February 22nd. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Next will be House File 123.
She
you.
Representative Slawick, would you state your name and your purpose for being here?
Nora Slawick, State Representative 55B, here on House File 123. I would like to move House File 123. Mr. Chair and members, be recommended pass and referred to the Economic Competitiveness Finance Division, and then be referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Representative Slawick. Do you have any amendments for your bill?
No, I do not.
You may begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair and members, I will explain the bill a little bit. I know that there's also staff here that I would like to go over a chart with you on how this bill would work. Nina Manzi, I saw her here. Is here? Oh, it's here. Nina, if you, I would like you to explain the chart. Okay, Emily's going to explain the chart, and then we have two testifiers. This is a bill I have carried for a long time. You know, sometimes we put bills in every year, and sometimes they get heard, and sometimes they don't. So I'm delighted to have this bill heard. Back in my early years in the legislature, we passed a similar deduction and expense education tax credit for grades K through 12. What this tax credit and deduction does, it simply takes it down to the pre-kindergarten level. So it's a fairly simple bill. It would have a deduction to pre-kindergarten educational programs and memberships in museums, zoos, historical societies, or similar institutions. It also defines pre-kindergarten education programs as programs established by school districts, licensed and accredited preschools, Montessori programs, child care programs. And for the education credit, it's very much similar. There is a chart in your packets I will ask Ms. Adrians to review. And it is a memo, actually, from the research department to myself from Nina Manzi. And it's an example of households and how they'd be affected by House File 123.
Mr. Chair, if you wouldn't mind. This Nina Manzi, one of the research people, put this together. And what I'll do is just quickly walk you through it. The first example shows a married couple with one child in preschool with annual expenses of $5,000. And there actually is a correction on here. So let's look at the first one where the household income is $28,000. Under current law, the credit that they would receive is $720. And now with this law expanding the K-12 to pre-K expenses as well, it allows them an extra $1,000 rather than that $750 that's listed there. That's the maximum amount that a family could receive under the current law, and that's how it would be with this as well. And so then their expenses, rather than the $4,280, they would get that credit of $1,000 plus the $720. So that their total expenses after all of the tax benefits would be $3,280. And then the other example is for a family with an income of $60,000, and they are actually income ineligible for the two credits. So what they get to do instead is they get a deduction, and you take the marginal rate of it's 7.05%. And you multiply that by, I think it says in the bill that it's $1,625, and that comes out to about $115. So that gives them, rather than paying for the total $5,000, they get some benefit. So they pay $4,885. And then in addition with the museum credit that they get, so the example down below shows the first family with the income of $28,000, they get to deduct 75% of that expense, so that's why it's $150. And so their total expenses after the tax benefit is $50. And then the family that's income ineligible because it's $60,000 is their income, what they get to deduct is, again, that 7.05% of the $200 instead. So that gives them a deduction of about $14.
Thank you. With that, I'll have some brief testimony, and I want to thank the testifiers for coming here today, and then obviously we'll take any questions. So we have Cisa Keller, who's the director of New Horizons Academy in downtown St. Paul, and Melinda, who is a parent. So, Cisa.
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Cisa Keller. I'm the director of the New Horizons Academy in downtown St. Paul. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about why this credit, I think, would be really beneficial. Currently, I have about 140 children in my center. Of those, 35 are in the pre-K program. And of those 35 preschool or pre-Kers, there's 75% of them are actually in the county assistance program. And they have to pay a monthly copay as well as a CCA difference every week. So they are paying me anywhere between $100 to $300 a month that they have to pay out of pocket to actually attend my center. Many of those families, this is a huge struggle for them to choose to put that money towards their child's education. This tax credit would really take a lot of that burden off of them. There are several, I can just tell you, in the last 2 weeks, I've actually had to turn away four families that are not able to pay my the CCA difference that they would have to pay every week. It's a $20 weekly copay, and they are unable to pay that. This tax credit would really make it a little easier for them to do, to be able to come to the center. So I think the superintendent gave you guys a lot of figures as to why, obviously, pre-K is such an important thing and the important work that we do. So that's just kind of what I have to say. This is Melinda, one of my parents, and she can kind of talk about why it would be beneficial to her.
Please state your name. And
okay, Chair and members of the committee, I'm Melinda Heron. I'm a mother of three. I'm a single parent, currently working full-time. My average income monthly is probably about $2,000, not including child support. And with being a parent of three kids, the tax would help in the long run. It doesn't impact us right away. It wouldn't impact us right away, but in the long run, it would help because we're looking at getting extra money in the end, helping out with, like, better schooling for the children. They're able to get better clothing, stuff like that. With me being a single mom and the way it is now, I'm paying at least $220 a month in child care on top of the co-pays and all the other stuff. I think it would be beneficial to mostly single parents.
Members, are there questions for the presenter or the testifiers? President Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have any idea what kind of dollars this program would kind of use, or how?
One example might be to look at the school age deduction. I don't know if the fiscal staff have any idea how much that is used. We are not sure at this point. I remember when we passed that during a special session in the summer, it was not used as heavily because part of it is letting parents know that it's out there. And so, like most tax credits, it would probably start out much slower and then ramp up as parents learned about it and its availability.
Representative Wardlow.
Representative Slavik, is there a physical note in the process coming?
Emily?
I don't know. Mr. Chair and Representative Wardlow, there's no fiscal impact on any of the agencies like the Department of Education for this, but there is a revenue side of it, so we did request a note in order to get that revenue impact, and that's in the works right now.
Any other questions? Did you have any closing comments, Representative Slavik?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you to the testifiers. I think as we look at all the good things we can do in early childhood, tax credits and deductions are one thing we could add to the mix, and hope we can have it for our consideration, and we'll also we'll have involvement as it moves forward.
Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Slavik, Chair Slavik, whatever. Can you explain to us, we went around on this in the Finance Committee earlier on Monday, and I have to be honest, I do not understand the process yet for how this bill, let's make the assumption it would travel alone. What is the process by which it would travel to the floor from here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, well, one, I hope you saw there was a letter about fiscal notes
in
there.
Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
That was really upon your spurring me to do that, so I appreciate that. The process, as I understand it, is the tax chair has requested all tax credit bills, tax deduction bills, and the tax chair wants these soon because we need to make some kind of an assessment. You probably know with 134 members, there's a lot of these. So to try to add them all up and come with a number, and then tomorrow after the forecast, seeing how much money is available. So really it will be decided in the tax committee. I have been told it will be a very low target if we have a tax sort of credit deduction target, if not zero. So we are hearing these bills. We want to move them forward because they're good ideas. There's more coming. But I am not sure that this legislature is going to be able to fund tax credits and deductions.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slovak, I guess on the process side of things, what we were told in the Finance Committee on Monday was that the bills have to go to the Finance Committee to be re-referred to other committees. So if I were to, I guess I'll paint the hypothetical that as I understand it, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. What the bill will do is it will pass here today, it will go to Chair Murphy's Education Finance Committee. From there, that committee will take action and refer it to the Finance Committee. And from there, Chair Carlson's committee will then re-refer the bill to Chair Lincheski's committee at the tax committee level, at which, well, let's think positively here. Let's say that at that point it does get passed either on its own or as an omnibus bill, and then from that point it would come back to the Finance Committee a second time to be reviewed at the Finance Committee. Is that your understanding of how that process would work?
Well, Representative Garofalo, you're ahead of me. I mean, as a new majority, we are working out the kinks. I would have to refer to staff. Is that if that's our understanding, because we are referring it to Chair Murphy's committee for then a referral to taxes from there, is my understanding. When there, the one bill that's different is a tax bill, because you know that the tax committee has purview of it. So my understanding is that can be referred from Chair Murphy's committee. It does not necessarily have to go through the Finance Committee, is my understanding. I, Representative Graffler, I'd be happy to look into it okay. and find out further. But that's my understanding is with tax bills, they can be referred directly to the Tax Committee or through the main financing committees of the divisions are under.
Representative Graffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, Madam Chair, I really don't know. That was what I think it is. I don't know. I'd be more than willing to offer my input as whether a minority or majority member as to ways to improve the process. But it's going to be very difficult for us to accomplish things if the hypothetical I stated out is the proper process. And I'd be more than willing to offer any suggestions either in writing or offline to perhaps streamline and make the process a little more efficient.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I think that's good input. I mean, we are, I've been assured it's a good process, but I think we are learning. And we haven't seen it in action yet, so it's hard for us quite to know exactly how it's going to work. But the members that have been here and operated under such a, in legal terms, they use the word scheme, who have operated under this type of a scheme, it has worked.
Thank you, Representative Slavik. Representative Wardlow has a question first, and then we'll come back to you.
Well, just a comment on it. I mean, I think what the Representative Garofalo said is right, but, when it goes to the Chair Murphy's committee, that's just a CALA getting together, and they make a decision which committee to go to. They don't really hear the bill in committee. It's just that's what happened to one of my vets' bills. It went to the Finance Committee, and he said it's going to go there. So now I'm going to that committee. Eventually, my bill will go to taxes, too, because it's a property tax bill. But, that little stop at the Education Finance Committee is just a pen and paper thing, and within 30 seconds, it's probably been assigned.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo, you still have a question?
Just more of a comment. that we saw in finance on Monday, Representative Bly had to bring his bill to the Finance Committee to have it re-referred, and Madam Chair, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. But so we'll see where things go. But
thank you.
That's more of a process issue than the purview of this committee.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Eason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slawick, you mentioned that the tax committee is going to hear all the tax credit bills. If we would move ahead on one of these paths, how does that work? Does the tax credit amount then come out of our target? Is that the way that works when it's funded, or how does that work? If we would choose this route and use a tax credit as a funding mechanism, I think there's some advantages in using that in terms of participation from a number of stakeholders, and so I guess I'm just kind of curious how that funding would work.
Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Representative Eastland, my understanding is they would go to the tax committee, and the tax committee would not necessarily hear them all, but hold them all, so they would all be sort of there. So it's debatable which ones would move forward. In terms of the targets, Representative Solberg is coming to talk to all of us. I think you've probably been notified of this at this point. He's coming to talk to the Democrats, and then he's coming and talking to the Republicans about setting targets. So I think he will be asking you for your input at that time. My understanding is that each committee will have a target. There will also be a separate levy target and potentially, yes, a tax credit target. Whether it will be put up against our committee or not, is not as clear, because, as you all know, when we go to conference committee, our committee, the Early Childhood Committee, will be in the same one as the K-12, which has, for instance, more levies in it. So they may be rolled in more by division. So Chair Murphy's division, where you have everything under that, I will check into that and let you know. But it's trying to be organized in the best way possible. Also, we all do know they are not free, and so we have to really look at what the numbers are tomorrow. And when Representative Solberg comes and talks to all of us about what our needs are, I hope you'll have that discussion, because I know you also have a tax credit bill.
All right, members, any further questions? It's been moved that House File 123 be recommended to pass and returned to the Committee on Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness for further referral to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those voting no, say nay. Okay. All right. Representative, the motion prevails. Representative Murphy, you have a bill.
Thank you, Representative Bly. And to the members, we will be talking through these issues, obviously, in the coming weeks, so we'll get more answers for you, though, on some of these questions. Next, we have Representative Murphy, House File 235. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 235 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Murphy moves House File 235 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It'll be nice not to have to talk about the path for this bill, because it's mind-boggling sometimes. I think before you is a very simple bill, which seeks to increase the reimbursement for early childhood development screening by certain rates. The reimbursements have been set in policy for a long time. We've been doing these kind of screenings since 1977. The increases would go from $50 to $60 for three-year-olds, from $40 to $50 for four-year-olds, and from $30 to $40 for 5 to 6-year-olds prior to kindergarten. Early childhood screening is a means by which we providers, I'm thinking as a nurse right now, providers seek to identify developmental markers in young people, hearing difficulties with hearing, vision, growth and development, and with that identification, there is a possibility for early intervention, and that process is useful in helping young people become ready for school and good early learners. I have a number of testifiers with me, and I'm going to turn the floor over to Ann Hoxie, who is a school nurse, and she is with the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota, SNOM, and she will proceed, and the other testifiers will introduce themselves. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Ann Hoxie, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would just like to ask you to really consider this. The funding has not changed since 1999, and it's getting much more difficult for us to provide the service on those $1999 dollars. We need to hire interpreters, and we need to be able to serve all the kids in our district. So this, it seems like it's time to raise those funds up. And this year, when we're looking so much at the needs of preschool kids and how we can help them, early childhood screening is the way a community reaches into out to young families and hooks them up with the resources, whether that's school readiness, community kindergarten, Head Start, or whether it's health care services, parenting classes. We offer parents a wide variety of resources, and parents choose whether that's going to work for them or not. It's really the way communities come together to put this on is a wonderful program.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and since we are the ones who pay the bills at the end of the day, we think this is a good decision, a good bill. This comes from us, from our membership, who said, even in the outstate, is more so than the metro area, was that they're dealing with additional costs of hiring interpreters at $125 an hour. To deal with the ESL, second language students, and so there's additional costs there, additional time as well, since we've bumped it down from 3.5 to 3 years of age. And so we think that our membership has established a legislative position here to support the full funding of this, and we think this is a good step in the direction to fully fund the developmental screening, because it's an important piece for schools. Thanks.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Slawick and members. My name is Charlie Blesner. I'm the Community Education Director in the Elk River School District, District 728, Elk River, Rogers, Zimmerman, and Otsego. I'm also the past president of the Minnesota Community Education Association. I'm going to speak today to a few of the mandates that are provided in the screening law currently, and I'm just to make you aware of the mandates that are there. The criteria that we are to adhere to in meeting the intent of the law, a little bit about the funding's picture in terms of the scope of it and history of it, and then to kind of localize the story to our district. I've been charged in our district with administering this program since 1991. In 1991, the compensation per child was $25. In 1999, it was increased to $40. And in the 05-06 year, as an incentive for districts to get to kids earlier, the rather than $40 across the board, the 3-year-olds were increased to $50. The 4-year-olds are compensated at $40, and there's a penalty if you don't get the kid until they're 5 or 6 or whatever, of $30. The mandates, which by the way I support, this is a wonderful law. It does a good job of identifying early issues with kids and giving us a chance to intervene in the life of the child, hopefully to prevent subsequent achievement gap students, to reduce those numbers, and to result in better student achievement down the road. But among the mandates that are currently in the law is that every child is screened at least once before school entry. The kids are to be targeted between the ages of 3 and 4. There's a requirement for the student to, in order to attend a public school, they have to be screened before kindergarten or first grade. We have to identify, provide a student ID number, assign them to each child, basically a MARS number at the time that we do the screening as a three-year-old. There's a mandatory report to the Department of Education on our activities and the referral process. And then there are several mandated screening components and several optional ones. The mandated ones include a developmental assessment, hearing and vision and screening and referral, immunization review and referral, height and weight, identification of risk factors that may influence the learning of that child. There's a parent interview about the child and their life, as well as a referral for assessments, diagnosis, and treatment when potential needs are identified. Although early identification is optimal, screening these three-year-old children or preschool kids is very time-intensive, and the costs are certainly exceeding funding. I alluded earlier to the funding history. Currently, statewide, in the fiscal year 06, there were 59,910 children screened in Minnesota, 59,910. Over a third of those children were identified with a potential concern, and in 05-06, the average cost in a local school district to deliver that service was $65.59 per child, $65.59. And you can see that the current funding level is at about $40. This bill will increase the compensation per child by $10. I can bear out the same story in our district. Last year, in the most recent year, we screened 1,099 children in District 728. We're a large, rapidly growing population district. We have 56,000 residents of over 11,000 students K-12, a real rapidly growing mobile school district, and we spend a lot of dollars and time just on child find, identifying who these kids are, getting information on live births, updating our census information as much as we possibly can. In the same time, the way we deliver that service is in a very high-quality, parent-friendly kind of way. We have options for parents to participate in the screening activity in the same, very similar, I call it kind of a dental office type arrangement. You can sign up for a specific appointment time at a scheduled time and date. We offer morning, afternoon, and evening opportunities. We offer weekend opportunities on Saturday morning. So it's we are really trying to provide a really good service. Overwhelmingly positive evaluations from parents. We have a satisfaction rating of over 95%. I think public education often is accused of delivering services in a more expensive way than is necessary, and that certainly isn't the case in our district. We do have nearly a full-time clerk to provide the management of this program. We're not charging any administrative costs against this budget. In addition, we staff the actual screening function with part-time hourly employees that are being paid less than a starting teacher gets paid. Nevertheless, they're high-quality folks. We've got retired speech clinicians. We have school nurses that are doing this function. And staff from ECFE and school readiness that are performing this function beyond their normal contracts. Staff are not overpaid, and in our case, we spent last year on those 1,099 children, we spent $60,000 to deliver the service, and our state reimbursement was $45,290, of which I think 15% to 20% was withheld because we don't get the money in the same year that we deliver the service. In terms of incenting us to do a better job of reaching three-year-olds, we're doing that. We screened of those 1,099 kids, 305 of those were three-year-olds, and only 144 of those were five-year-olds. So you figure, Charlie, the net result must have been that you must have realized around $45, $46 per child, and that's not the case. Our revenue came in at $41.21. Just taking the back from 99 at $40 and plugging in a 2 or 3% inflation rider on that revenue stream, you result in about a $47 to $49 range in terms of had that levy or that state aid been indexed back in 99. So in closing, it's a very solid program. It's well instituted. It's delivered the best way that I think it can be in the state. It's a mandated program. It's not an unfunded mandate, but I would suggest to you it's very much an underfunded mandate. And I'm speaking here today for the adoption of House File 235. I appreciate your time and the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? I know that I took took my kids to be screened, and it was a big gym, and he had all the retired nurses, and it was it's quite a process for as a parent going through it to see what happens. But I know that one of my neighbors was identified with a hearing problem, that they had no idea that their child had a hearing loss. Any questions? We also have one more bill to get through, and we have and Representative, the next bill also covers screening as well. Okay. Any closing comments, Representative Murphy?
I just thank you very much for your time and attention. Hopefully your support.
Thank you. Members, Representative Murphy moves House File 235 for inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, I guess we don't vote. Excuse me. So erase that. Go back a little bit. We don't vote on that. It's for possible inclusion. You're correct, Representative Kranz. We did a couple there, see, and I got in the rhythm of it. So thank
Madam
you,
Chair,
Representative
Kranz. Thank you for putting that on the record that Kranz was correct.
No.
That's all that
okay. So moved. Or so done. Representative Bly. Thank you, Representative Murphy, and to your testifiers for...
The broken clock is right.
What are we at? Members, on Thursday we'll be hearing about Head Start, so if you have questions or just know that will be the main bills will be on Head Start for that day. And it looks like if we keep to our schedule, we're going to get most of our bills done within our committee time, so we keep moving like this. Welcome to the committee, Representative Bly.
Glad to be here. I'm Representative David Bly, and I have a bill that I would like to move for consideration for the omnibus bill. It's House File 585. And I do have an amendment I'd like to. It's actually a delete all amendment.
Okay. Representative Bly, is that the DE1 amendment?
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Bly moves the DE1 amendment. Would you like to discuss the amendment?
In the interest of trying to... pardon?
Sorry. It's because it's a delete all.
Yes.
Basically, it is the basis of your bill. So why don't we adopt it first? Representative Bly moves the adoption of the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Representative Garofalo?
Madam Chair, Representative Bly, can you tell us what the changes are in the delete all versus the bill as was submitted to the committee?
Representative Bly?
Initially, when it was presented, there were a number of questions about some of the language in how we referred to some of the recommendations that the Department of Human Services or MDE might make. There were some concerns about how the grant...
Typically, Representative Garofalo, we allow authors, as you know, to put the bills in shape, and then we get them in shape and then have them discuss it.
Okay.
We would move to have it.
Okay, right. There were questions about how the grant procedure might work for the parent training, and I think we've cleared up a lot of that language, so I'll just move the delete all amendment. Do you want me to explain now, or...?
Let me just get it adopted in the shape you'd like it. Members, Representative Bly moves the DE1 amendment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Bly, if you could proceed with talking about your bill.
Let me just say that I do have some testifiers here. I'll just mention them by name, and then I'll go into the bill. Lois Engstrom is here, Director for the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education. Mary Kay Stranick, Family Program Consultant. Carolyn Smallwood, Executive Director of Way to Grow, and also LaDonna White, who's not on your list, is here from the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches. I don't know if there'll be time for LaDonna to testify or not. We'll see. But, okay. So this bill is an attempt to try to serve at-risk parents and children in ECFE programs, first of all, to kind of focus limited resources at those needy parents and children, and also asks that a program accountability plan be put in place. It increases ECFE revenue and the amount school districts may levy for home visiting programs. It also directs the Education Commissioner to provide for parent education grants. And I'd like to have my testifiers begin. So, Lois?
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And let me just tell the members, this bill has been through the E-12 Policy Committee already. So we have been gone through the process at one point already. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lois Engstrom, and I'm representing the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education. And I wanted to speak very strongly in support of this bill. As we've noticed, there aren't that many bills that have an emphasis on parent education, and I think that if you want the best bang for your buck, we work with parents because they're the ones who have the greatest impact on the children. What they learn in these programs, they can reinforce 24 hours a day all the way through and learn different techniques. There's no one single way that's promoted and so on. Different techniques work for different families. And so I think they learn a lot from each other as well as from well-qualified staff. So we feel like it is a very cost-effective effort. Some of these things were mentioned in the other committee. So just to give you a real quick rundown on what early childhood family education does these days is everybody seems to know about the weekly classes. ECFE is a major partner in the family literacy efforts, which are pretty extensive, more like 15 hours a week, working with teen parents both in high schools, alternative schools, and in special classes, bilingual classes, classes specifically for fathers, for single parents, for families of children with special needs, families that have multiple stressors, and referral very often to other resources as they become evidence. Weekly classes that are held in low-income sites in different apartment buildings, trailer parks, and so on, going to where the people are. A lot of outreach. A lot of the aforementioned things were all in groups. The other big advantage that we see with families is when they're in a group of parents who have similar age children, very often they're the ones who detect some of these early problems that can then be dealt with very, very early. And there's something about seeing a whole lot of children all in the same age range, and parents are very often the ones who say, you know, my child isn't doing that. And we'll ask the question. So it's a great assist also for the child find efforts in the state. The all the classes for diverse populations, of course, the need of that for that keeps increasing. We get in the program a lot of referrals from the court system, and this is one of the alternatives offered to parents as a way to, in many cases, they're there because they're required to be there in order to keep their children. Weekly classes and sessions, visits to homeless shelters, crisis nurseries, transitional housing, again, reaching out to where some of these hard to reach but also very much at-risk families are. Ongoing home visits to low-functioning families, and there we find it's very important to not just do home visiting but connect a lot of these people to a larger group so they've got some contacts and support. Collaboration, hospital visits, a lot of different things. I don't want to take the time to go into all this because I know that time is short. But the budget cuts in recent years, of course, have made it more difficult to do as much of this as the programs would like to do. I went through, just to go back to the history, when the program first started in 1985, the allowance per child on that 0-4 population was $79.25. If that had kept pace with inflation, we'd be looking this year at about $170. And we're tickled to think that we're going to get back to $120, but obviously the need is much greater than that. So we appreciate your consideration of that. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chairperson, I am Mary Kay Stronach, and I am a family program consultant from St. Louis Park, District 44B. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify here today in support, as with Lois, strong support of House File 585 and the piece of the of the bill that I would like to speak to is the parent education grant section. And I want to emphasize the importance of parent choice in this regard. Minnesota has a huge variety of organizations that are doing parent education. And we're definitely in favor of ECFE as our base organization in terms of parent and family education. But there are many others that are also out there doing parent education with families who face many challenges. And some of our evaluation gurus in our field, and one is Doug Powell at Dr. Doug Powell at Purdue University, they tell us over and over again that what's important in successful outcomes for parents is that there is a good match between the parent and the program. Not all parents want the same kind of program, and we really do have this variety in Minnesota. Parents really need to be met where they are, in environments where they're comfortable, and at times when they are available. They are most often, or often, they are most comfortable when parent educators are people like themselves, so that they can see by example and by modeling that they too can have children who can succeed. So parents need to have choices that will match their own needs. I asked that a sheet of paper be distributed to all of you. I don't know if it actually made it in the packet or if it was distributed, I think, afterwards. Yeah. And I just pulled together a list of organizations in the area, ones that I just came off the top of my head. This list is by no means complete, and nor is it meant to list the biggest or the best of the programs, but rather to indicate the breadth of organizations that understand the importance of parenting education and have programs that may be filling a need for those particular programs, those particular parents in the programs that they serve that aren't really getting any parenting education for multiple reasons. You can see by the list, I'm not going to go over it, you all can look at it, that they come from many perspectives, parenting education, obviously, housing, juvenile justice, churches, the health community, different ethnic perspectives, employment programs, child programs, and many of these already offer very comprehensive services. So this is one service in the middle of other services. And you can also see, or maybe I didn't actually list on here, but there's a large variety of methodologies, groups, home visiting, mentoring, different organizations use different ones. And they are done by a variety of providers, parent educators, social workers, peer facilitators, community members, nurses. So my final point here is that while all of these programs exist, some of them have some funding issues and that they can use additional grant programs that might come from the state government. But in return, they really also need to be held to quality programming and best practices and evaluation. The work needs to be done to establish these standards around content, adult education methods, parent-driven topics, and appropriate evaluation methods. And this grant program would help these groups to live up to those standards. So I ask that you seriously consider the parent education grants as part of this, as an essential part of this bill. And thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to be with us today. To the next testifier, Carolyn Smallwood, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Carolyn Smallwood, and I am the executive director of an organization called Way to Grow. We're located in the heart of Minneapolis, North and South Minneapolis area, and we're supporting, and I'm here to support both bills, the bill SF 579 as well as HF 585. I need my glasses. Excuse me. Age is showing. At any event, what we do as an organization, we provide services to 7
different ethnic groups. There are 7 different languages that are spoken in our area at Way to Grow, and the services are considered parent education, support services where we connect families to food, clothing, and housing, as well as health education. The organization has been around since 1989. We have a strong partnership with ECFE. Actually, we provide the minority content in the city for ECFE on a regular basis. We have about 4 learning centers where our parents are shipped by bus, and we provide babysitting services as well to come to our facilities. Keep in mind, we deal with considered high-risk, low-income, multilingual folks in that community. At the particular time, I am coming to this committee and chair to say that a couple things. One, early education is highly needed. 80% of the children that we deal with are far, far behind. They're not going to be ready for school unless we do something about this now. This is at academic proportions. We're dealing with them on a regular basis. We have parents that are only reading at the 9th and 10th grade level. We have multiple programs, of course, that are addressing some of these issues. And thank God we have a lot of you in this room that will support things like this. But we're in trouble. So I'm coming. I'm going to make it real short. I'm glad I had an opportunity to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming today.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Last we have our last testifier, if you could state your name for the committee. Members, what we're going to try to do is we can squeeze in a question or two. We also have another testifier on the bill, and if you can stay for a couple minutes, I appreciate it, so we can talk about the bill a little bit. Welcome to the committee.
My name is LaDonna White, and I am here on behalf of the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches. I'm pleased to offer the support of the faith community for House File 585, especially the parent education grants part of it. It has been our experience in our work with underrepresented, low-income, and disadvantaged families that if parents are left out of the equation, anything you offer to the children is not going to be nearly as effective as it would be had we had parents involved. The program that we are beginning to implement is called Born to Learn, and their motto is, parents are the children's first and best teachers. I believe that, and I also believe that many of the parents who seriously need this kind of help are not being reached. And so I'm just applaud efforts Representative Bly has given us in the bill to be able to reach those parents that are hardest to reach. The faith community has got lots of resources to offer in this regard, and many of the churches and other faith-based organizations, community-based organizations, are ready to do these kinds of work. This kind of work, they've done it in the past anyway, have not been recognized for it, and have not been able to be as effective because their funding has not been available. So I'd just like to thank you for letting me tack on to the end of the testimony part of the bill, and to say that Nora Slawick is the RIC representative out in my area. So.
Oh, woohoo! Oh, very glad you're here. So thank you for coming and for your testimony, and that we fit you in. Are there questions? Well, we have the last testifier come down here. Members, you know, as we put these bills in for inclusion, we can pick parts of the bills out. Obviously, this bill, there's been the parent grants have been sort of the featured part. The whole bill is up for consideration, but recognize that when a bill is up for inclusion, we can also take certain parts of it. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm with EdWatch. Regarding Representative Bly's bill, I will say that it has changed significantly since it was heard in E-12, and I commend him for listening to the concerns that were stated by the different groups as well as the members of that other committee in dealing with the concerns that we brought forward. I will say that parent education is perhaps a needed piece, but I will remind the Committee of the Legislative Auditor's report that said that these programs like ECFE do help parent work, but they don't necessarily help the cognitive development of the child. So again, one needs to look at the goals and decide how we're going to spend the resources. With regard to home visiting, which is also in the bill, I will just say again that there have been several national studies that show that they do not reduce child abuse rates and they do not help the cognitive development of the child. So it may help with parenting, it may help with parent behavior, but if we're looking to improve the cognitive development of the child, again, you have to look, have to consider that when you're making your final decisions. If I could just go back to Representative Murphy's bill for one moment, the Minnesota state statute also says, in addition to the to what was testified to, that in 121A.17 subdivision 3E, if a statement signed by the child's parent or guardian is submitted to the administrator or other person having general control or supervision of the school, that the child has not been screened because of conscientiously held beliefs of the parent or guardian, the screening is not required. There are examples, and I have them here for the committee's consideration, of three districts where that is not being told to parents, and it is being portrayed that the screening is absolutely required. And while I understand the concerns about underfunded, it's still important to let parents know what current law is regarding conscientiously held beliefs, as well as the required notification that they may get the screening done via a private provider.
Could the page pass those out, please? Your handouts. Do we have anything else?
So when the screening, that part is considered for your omnibus bill, I would just ask due consideration to those parents' rights pieces.
Thank you. I do want to take just a second to say next week, I think, we're working with the Legislative Library, Robbie LaFleur, who's the head librarian, on being kind of a test pilot of all the committees as a place where we can put all our research. And so if you could get the research studies, and we'll post all everything we get in this committee will be posted on a website that we can all go to. And as we continue in this process, then we can kind of, that will help us make our decisions. Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, real quickly, I realize we're over time. Representative Bly, I too appreciate the changes in the bill. It is dramatically different from what we saw in E-12 and in some very good ways. I'm still concerned, since we're in a finance committee here, about how we're going to pay for this. We're doubling the levy cap. It's a common theme here, how we're going to pay for all these things. But I do appreciate the flexibility and the responsiveness.
I think we all are going to be interested in that, too, tomorrow, to see what the forecast is. And as we move towards targets, as we get a target, we're going to it's going to be much more clearer how much we can really do. And so that'll become clearer and clearer. Representative Eastland.
Madam Chair, do we have any timeline as far as window when we are going to see a target?
Well, Representative Mason, that is a good question. As we know, you and I went before the Ways and Means Committee this week, and then Representative Solberg is going to be talking to the majority-minority members next week. We're going to see what the forecast is tomorrow. I don't have a date, but I think it will be as when he's finished with meeting all the committees, it will be sometime after that, maybe late next week or early the next week, I'm thinking, because it's very hard for the finance committees to get their work done without having some financial parameters. But I don't want to speak out of turn. I have not been given a date, so I do not have it. But I'm hoping it's soon so we can all set our sights on. And I am going to want input from every one of you in terms of what you want when we get that target, because we're going to each put in what we want, and then we're going to have to fight over it or argue eloquently over the needs of young children in the state. Representative Eastland?
That was my next question, how we were going to eloquently fight over it.
Well,
if we were going to, if we're just going to proceed and and pass bills that we think are good ideas and lay them on the table for possible inclusion, and then is there going to be a process for the possible inclusion?
Yes.
Or are we going to be more discriminatory in laying bills on the table? I guess that was kind of a...
Well, Representative Eastland, it will be similar to the processes last year, which where we build our omnibus bills, we lay bills on the table. We are going to try to have our bill to Representative Murphy's committee by the 27th, okay, of March, so that they have it, and they need to have it done by April 2nd, by that deadline. So it's really backing us up here. As a process has worked in the past, you know, if I was Representative Gunther, I mean, Representative Groffler remembers this, he gave every committee member something. You know, I don't know if I can do that. We're going to have enough money to do that. But I would like to work with each of you on what you really do want, that one thing you want in your bills. As you know, the majority members will meet. We'll all meet together. We'll talk, but then we will meet. Okay, how about this? The majority members will seek your input. We'll all be giving input. We will meet. We will come out with a bill. You will be have a day to amend the bill any way you want. The bill will pass out. So that's the process, and that's a typical process. So is that clear?
Yeah, and just from the standpoint, Madam Chair, of timing, that will occur right around the 25th, 26th, in that time frame, just before the 27th. That's when we'll be building the omnibus bill the last couple of days.
Probably. Yes. Yeah, so we're trying to give us plenty of time. There are committees, I mean, you probably talked to the same people I talked to, that will be meeting over the weekend to do that. So some committees are meeting the weekend right before that. We have members from all over and have to come far places. We're trying not to do that. We are hoping we may take one of the committee meetings that week and have us each meet with our own members to talk about what we want in the bill. But we're going to try to get it done during committee time. If we can't, that is when we'll have to spend some extra time meeting. But, yes, we're under pretty tight timelines to get it out, and we will be following that very closely. And at any time, you know, keep asking us, but it'll by the 25th we need to have it done, which means amendments would be on the 23rd, potentially, about that time. The meeting before that, we would go through the amendments, or potentially the 25th, do the amendments, and then pass the bill out. Any other questions? Representative Groffalo?
Well, Madam Chair, you mentioned that in the past, you know, like Representative Gunther had each member put something in the bill they wanted. Maybe in that spirit, if perhaps there was something each member wanted taken out of the bill.
I'll take that under advisement.
No, okay.
This is a new idea. Representative Bly.
If I could just make a closing comment on
that. Yes.
this bill really attempts to, I think, get at two things. And one is, you know, the belief that investment in human capital and education is very important, and especially trying to focus limited resources at those parts of our society that need the most help to come forward and catch up. And then on the other hand, recognizing that there are many communities in our society, and that sometimes the communities that get left behind or left out are the hardest to reach, and we're trying to develop ways to make sure that we reach those families that need the most help, and trying to rely on the existing institutions that are out there that can help us do that.
Okay. With that, Representative Bly, House File 585, I should know that number, 585, is moved for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Omnibus Bill. Thank you, members, for staying a couple minutes over. With that, this meeting is adjourned.